From Hook and Bullet to Policy and Science, we're here to discuss and dissect all matters of importance to Montana's rugged landscape and the people and wildlife that call it home. This is Montana Untamed. Elk hunting in Montana has been under the microscope over the last year, following a contentious season-setting process and widespread debate about management of one of the state's most iconic species. New regulations, advisory committees, a new management plan, access agreements, and a lawsuit have grabbed headlines as Montana's hunting community, landowners, lawmakers, and state wildlife managers grapple with change and the potential for more changes. One of the latest debates was sparked by work from an Elk Management Advisory Committee that recommends Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks consider what would be a major shakeup for a lot of elk hunters. Choose a weapon and season. Tom, you recently wrote about this recommendation and others, which has Montana's hunting world talking. But can you tell me a little bit more about this committee?
So we came out of the last season setting process, I think, with a lot of issues and a lot of bad feelings, I think, on out of some groups and, mm-hmm. and some sides. We saw a lot of debate and a lot of shots traded back and forth between some of the groups that, probably had more influence under a Democratic administration than under the current administration. And, you know, when you change administrations, there's going to be change.
Right.
So we've seen that play out, especially when the new administration decided to advance some regulations that ended up being very unpopular. Those ultimately didn't go forward totally. There were some changes and some things that happened. But I think coming out of that, it was a pretty interesting, I guess, sort of state of the world in hunting in Montana. There's a lot of concern that about what the direction is, I guess, is the best way to say it. So from that, though, we've seen a lot of other things happen. We did see the lawsuit filed by United Property Owners of Montana that's seeking to overturn the regulations, and mm-hmm. we'll see how that plays out. But coming out of that that season-setting process, FWP Director Hank Warsek decided to convene a new elk advisory management group. So it's 12 members, and what he's, I guess what the goal of the group is to sort of make very broad, but I guess bold recommendations about, okay, there are some issues with hunting in Montana. What are they? Are there solutions out there to deal with those? Montana's a growing state in terms of population. Access remains a challenge in a lot of places, mm-hmm. and elk numbers in a lot of those places are going up. At the same time, you know, there's areas where there are low elk numbers in northwest Montana and traditionally have been low numbers, and hunters up there have issues as well. But this 12-member group, it's interesting because Warsek chose not, I guess, to appoint a lot of like the interest groups we've seen, you know, be pretty vocal about this and are pretty organized.
So yeah, you said, so how, who are the 12 members? Where do they come from?
So there was 243 applications
okay.
for this committee, which, wow. which is a pretty good number. Out of that, he chose 12 and sort of from the best I can tell, they're sort of involved with hunting, but not necessarily like, you know, a paid staffer for an interest group.
Okay.
But they're sort of a mix of like landowners, public hunters, ranch managers. So people, you know, that have a knowledge and investment in hunting in Montana. So, right. And you do watch the committees and, you know, people do know what they're talking about, and are sort of representing different viewpoints.
Right.
So they've met multiple times over the last couple months here, and it started, you know, talking about things. And then I should back up a little bit. So the people that applied but were not selected for the group they get to be what's called a sounding board.
Okay.
So what this committee has been doing, they've been sort of coming up with proposals, and they'll send it to the sounding board for comment. That'll come back, and then they'll talk about it in advance, sort of what the message was and,
right.
and sort of how they've come forward with that.
And so it's an advisory committee, so it doesn't have any sort of regulatory abilities. So it sends these recommendations to the Fish and Game Commission, is that correct?
Well, to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks leadership.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think, and that's probably an important point we need to make right front. And I think when people saw the headline, I did my best to say advisory committee recommends.
Right.
But I think there, you know, some people thought, okay, this might be a done deal.
Right.
It is far from a done deal.
Right.
This is a recommendation from a committee that has no power. We're a long ways from the Fish and Wildlife Commission putting in a regulation or the legislature making a new law.
Right.
So, so they've been meeting over the last few months and sort of advancing and debating and then last week they decided to adopt their first four recommendations. You know, there were some, you know, kind of common sense ones like, hey, let's promote local elk working groups.
Right.
Obviously nobody's going to get consternation over that. You know, and then there's some tweaks to damage hunts and shoulder seasons and how they're used and stuff like that. But obviously the big one is this pick your weapon, pick your season.
Right, right. You know, and that would be a huge change from the way it is right now. Right now, you know, we have a system of general tags where there's a 5-week archery season and a 5-week general season.
6-week archery season.
6-week archery season, 5-week general, 5-week rifle season. You know, and you can choose to hunt either of those. You know, you have to have the archery certificate or whatever, the stamp of approval that you've actually taken an archery education class to be able to hunt that. But people who have, you know, 11 weeks of hunting elk, and that's not even taking in shoulder seasons and you know, game damage hunts. You know, and a lot of these hunters, I suppose not a lot of them, but there's a good number of them. You and I are you know, case examples where, you know, we get our general tag and we hunt the archery season and then we hunt the rifle season if we weren't lucky in the archery season. Can you kind of flesh that out for us, how big of a change that would be for Montana?
Yeah, so I think you kind of framed it really nicely that the 6-week, the ability for a Montana resident or a non-resident who gets a tag, gets a license in the lottery to be able to go and with a general license hunt for 11 weeks. Like you said, we're not even talking about shoulder seasons
all the
or damage hunts or
right.
muzzle loader now.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, that's a pretty cherished part of Montana's hunting opportunity.
Right.
And by all accounts, I think if you look at other states, Montana is by and large considered an opportunity state.
Right. Right.
You know, we do have special permit areas. So it's sort of a mix of that. But long seasons and very liberal regulations tend to what Montana's known for. And people who've hunted in Montana a long time, that's what they're used to and that's what they value. So I think any loss of opportunity is going to be viewed pretty skeptically.
Right. You know, and I'm not particularly educated about the nuances of other Western state seasons, but it's my understanding that, you know, Montana is kind of on its own and unique in that regard of how much time is open for just a general hunter to, you know, head to the hills in search of elk.
Yeah, and there are some longer seasons, not longer than Montana necessarily, but, you know, Montana's relatively large landscape.
Right.
Pretty decent animal numbers and relatively low population is why it is this way.
Right, right.
But again, as demographics change, as more people move there and more pressure gets put on a finite resource, and then access becomes more of an issue, that's something, you know, you got to grapple with and make decisions on. And this is one recommendation on a way to do that, or right, to try to do that.
So before we get to how interest groups and hunters and in the whole hunting community has reacted to this, I'd like to step back and share why this advisory committee even proposed this. What's the problem they're trying to solve with this?
So the problem they're trying to solve is overcrowding of hunters on public land. And as we know, a lot of where the general areas are is brow tine bull only.
Right.
So the way it's being framed is that you have the obviously unfettered access to public land.
Right.
By what is an unlimited number of people who want to go out and buy a license. You know, if they qualify for it, you got to have hunter safety if you're under a certain.
But for any license holder, the
any
public
license
land
holder
is theirs to hunt.
Is theirs to hunt. So that's going to get the most pressure every year.
Right.
That or, you know, certain block management areas, accessible private lands.
Right, right.
That there's too much pressure and the quality of the hunt is
diminished.
Being diminished. So what this would do is say, you know, you have 140,000 whatever hunt general license holders, and there's, I want to say there's like 44,000 archery hunters.
Okay.
On a given year, something somewhere around that. Don't quote me on those exact numbers, but
right.
So the question is then, if you said, okay, you have to choose one or the other, then how many people would choose one or the other?
Right.
And that sort of is where the nitty gritty gets down to it, and a lot more questions are coming out about the proposal.
So let's get to how the hunting community and special interest groups are reacting to this proposal.
Yeah. So when the committee voted on this, and you know they spent a lot of time on this again, I think and a couple important things I want to point out is they are all about FWP gathering more data on this.
Right.
Okay. So they want to. They're saying, well, you need to go out and poll hunters and say, like, if we did this, how many of you are going to choose one or the other? Scott Van Dyken from Great Falls is the one committee member who voted against it. And he voted against it because he said it's not going to work. What you're going to do is basically have a certain number of archery hunters drop out, mm-hmm. which will reduce archery numbers, but because obviously rifles
higher success
rate,
right.
A portion of those are going to switch to rifle hunting. So it's really going to be a sort of nominal difference in the raw number of rifle hunters on a
right.
given year.
The idea being that you're going to have a higher concentration of rifle numbers because those that who would have previously archery hunted are going to select the rifle season over archery because of the higher success rate.
Yeah. So let's just think about like who hunts in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
You have people who are diehard archery hunters.
Right.
That's all they do.
Right.
But I think it's safe to say that there's fewer of them. They're probably in the minority out of everybody.
Right.
Then you have,
and those folks are probably applying for the 900 tag anyway and not the general tag.
Well, that's going away. So,
okay.
But yeah, so, and then you have a bigger chunk of people who only rifle hunt.
Right, right.
But then you have this segment of people who do both.
Right.
How many is that? Is it 30,000? Is it 20,000? Are they going to choose, you know, rifle or archery? The other thing you got to think about is how our seasons are set up. And part of this proposal, too, I should say, is they want to shift seasons a little bit, so they would reduce archery season by 1 week, but it would be a 5 week archery season starting September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Then there would be a 2 or 3 week, which is usually a dead week, but
right.
then they would hold a shoulder season hunt
in
on
between.
Private land.
Okay.
The theory there that, you know, if you start shooting cows on private land, maybe it'll push some elk onto public again.
Before rifle.
And then you would have the same time frame, 5 week general season ending
okay.
the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So there would be a little shift there, but say And I think this is what some of the other concerns are, we'll get into. So let's say you still want to hunt 11 weeks a year,
right,
or have the ability to hunt 11 weeks a year. Well, September, as we know, is when elk rut. So we as archery hunters could opt for that season,
right,
to hunt elk. But then theoretically, because if they're not touching deer in this, then go hunt deer
during the rifle.
During the rifle. Or, I mean, I should point out, like, I this isn't really addressing, you know, bee tags or things like that. Maybe you could go hunt a cow or something. But there's some concern here that, you know, if you did choose your season and you don't touch deer, that, oh my, you know, deer are going to get hammered, because that's what the available species will be on a general tag.
For those
tag.
Folks that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think unintended consequences are some of the questions that they would have to look at with this.
Is this what people are these unintended consequences, are these the kind of reactions people are bringing up after, you know, this story was posted?
Yeah, and it was interesting. It's been a mix of reactions. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a segment of people that say this is BS and no way, no how.
Right.
There's a few people saying, I think it's a great idea. Backcountry hunters and anglers posted a pretty long blog post about it, I think,
right,
we found interesting. And they just said, you know, this is inevitable. It's going to happen at some point, but they don't think this is the time.
Right.
So there's some other things that I think they're working on. Obviously, this would be the big one if the chips fell on it. But it is interesting that it's not being you know, groups like Backcountry Hunters and Anglers really went hard after the department over some of the regulation stuff.
Right.
And it doesn't appear that they're doing that in this case.
Interesting.
That there is, and granted, it's an advisory committee. It's not, you know, FWP brass coming out or a commissioner coming out and saying this, but that there is sort of more of an acceptance of this is this way, but we need to think in different ways now.
Right.
But that maybe this would be the nuclear option.
Right, right, right.
And that we're not there yet, so.
And so, you know, it's obviously this has gotten hunters talking. It generated some agreement and opposition, like you said. But where does it go from here, right? It's a recommendation. So to be clear, we're a long ways from choose your weapon from going into effect.
Yeah, so I think anyone who follows these issues know this was going to be controversial, and it is controversial. We are a long ways from the commission even considering this.
Right.
So right now, FWP has multiple, I guess, avenues that they're working on elk.
Right.
They're doing their annual, you know, biologist counts and everything out there in the field. Right now they're holding public meetings across the state about the rewrite of the elk management plan. And management plans they're sort of tough to crack sometimes. But the public should really, if they're interested in elk hunting, pay attention to this one.
Right.
Because this is where objectives are set or how they're going to count elk. And that's what a lot of the controversy is about, whether elk are above, at, or below objective. Because an objective is based, you know, somewhat on biology, but also on, you know, what's sort of a jargony term of landowner tolerance.
Right.
But, you know, it's essentially the stated number, and FWP is required under law to try to manage elk to objective.
Right.
It's the stated number that they're supposed to try to hit with that law. Mm-hmm. So what I've been hearing is that these meetings have been pretty sparsely attended so far.
Yes, and I was going to say, these are all open to the public, right?
Yep, that's what they are. And that not only have they been sparsely attended, but people are not entirely understanding what they're for. Like, they're coming in and saying, you know, I don't like this regulation, which it isn't exactly the time for that.
Right.
It's more, you know, what are the concerns about the objectives?
Right.
Or how should we be counting elk? You know, there's part of the current elk management plan that's people keep bringing up, and it it's an interesting part of it. It says if elk are inaccessible, they shouldn't count towards the objective. And that's really not used. And that's what I think part of the issue is. You have elk that are on private land that aren't accessible.
Right.
But if they jump a fence one day, then they are accessible.
They are.
So it's been, FWP says it's hard to use that part of it, but that's the issue though out there. You have these huge numbers of elk in places where you can't access them. And without access, no management's going to work,
right,
using public hunters.
So that dovetails into my next question here, because, yeah, we're public land hunters, and sure, there is an increased pressure. You see a lot more hunters on ridge tops and whatever. But there's another aspect to this too, maintaining the quality of hunt and also, maintaining, viable elk herds and, making sure the wildlife has what they need. So what's the advisory group doing to address concerns that, maybe too many hunters on public land is only half the problem and too many elk on private land is the other half of the problem? Are they looking at recommendations to FWP to kind of solve that problem?
Yeah, and I think, again, the choose your weapon would be interesting too, because it would also apply to private land. So,
right,
these landowners who don't allow public access would also theoretically lose that same hunting time too.
Right.
And it's private property. They have every right to do and manage their land however they want to.
Right.
The state has a vested interest in, trying to manage the wildlife, which is publicly owned on,
right,
that land.
That exists on the private land.
And that's always, there's always going to be a tension there.
Right.
A natural tension. So they are working on some other proposals and recommendations. The other stuff they passed, we talked about a little bit already, elk working groups. There's places like Sweetgrass County, Hell's Kitchen, where that's been, by all accounts, extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
They want to try to model that and work in more places with that.
Okay.
There's some emphasis on changes to game damage hunts. So a game damage hunt, you, as a hunter, can put your name on a roster. And what's supposed to happen is there's a rancher who, and by law, they have to allow some public access.
Under a game damage.
Under a game, to qualify for a game damage hunt.
Right.
During the general season, they have to allow some sort of access. FWP can approve a game damage hunt, and they will call people off the roster and say, we'll come out and you can come out and hunt, and kind of haystack hunt.
Right.
You're out there to kill elk.
Right.
And those have always sort of had some issues with, it's hard to find hunters, or you call a hunter in winter and it's hard to get them out there.
Right.
They don't know the lay of the land, and things like that. Or they're on the roster and they signed up for it in summer, and come winter that, they're not interested anymore.
Right.
So they want to make some changes there. It would basically say, you have, I guess, landowners, FWP could sort of select some local hunters. They would have to live within a certain proximity, or say they could get there in a certain amount of time. They're also talking about charging a fee to be able to do that. So the fee, according to the advisory committee, would be sort of incentivized
for people to actually follow through.
People having more buy-in
winter
on it. So, right. And then the other thing too is they want to be able to strike people for, bad behavior for the following years.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, I think, some of the issues landowners will have is that, you're letting people on my land that I don't want on there.
Okay.
And that's been a concern, and a legitimate concern, certainly.
Right.
The shoulder seasons are sort of interesting. We saw the commission allow some public land shoulder season hunts, which wasn't part of sort of why they were passed originally.
Right.
That's been a thorn for a lot of people, and the advisory committee says no, this should be this should be a private land deal.
Yeah, I mean, the whole inception of the shoulder season was concerns about private land.
Yeah, so basically what they're saying is we want to change the parameters around shoulder seasons. There's an early one, too, that takes place in August. They want to get rid of that in favor of game damage hunts.
Okay.
And then have this between the two seasons, shoulder season.
Right, like an early October shoulder season.
Yeah, it would be you're hunting in October.
Right.
So, you know, they are thinking outside the box on some stuff. You know, they have some other proposals, and we should, I should mention it's July 13th when we're taping this, and the group's going to meet here later today.
Okay.
So we might be a little, when you actually listen to this, they might have actually done some more action.
Right. So make sure and hop onto our website and read the latest from today's meeting.
Yeah. So, there's a couple things they're looking at, and it was interesting. They're talking about like in over objective areas, like a private land cow license, but it would be good for up to like 3 cows.
Oh, no kidding.
There would be the, I think there's a lot of interest in sort of also habitat on public land. Like why, in addition to hunting pressures, are there things we could do on public land that would improve the habitat and attract right. more game animals.
The elk are taking refuge on private land from hunters, but also maybe there's habitat there.
So there's interest among the advisory committee in trying to increase the state's footprint in habitat management on federal land, whether that would be through grants or like sort of cooperative agreements.
Okay.
I think that's sort of what they're going to. And you know, I think one thing we got to always keep in mind is ethics is always going to be a concern.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always going to be landowners that get turned off because of a bad experience with hunters.
Right.
And so there's just a lot of right now, and we haven't seen a ton of this roll out. We've seen some sort of campaigns from FWP talking about this, but I think there's a lot of concern that there needs to be an improvement in hunter behavior and mm-hmm. relationships with landowners, mm-hmm. That it's a two-way street. And, you know, we spend a lot of time at public meetings with hunters complaining about not being able to access elk, but the individual experiences too, and, you know, turning people off from allowing access is an issue.
Right.
Yeah, I know. And there needs to be some reckoning on it.
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, I've spoken with, you know, half a dozen landowners that have graciously allowed me to hunt their private property that have said, you know, I'm pulling out of block management or I'm allowing less hunters, this, that, or the other. And they all say, you know, it's because of the behavior of the hunters and whether it's disrespecting the land or whether it's, you know, harvesting more than they're allowed to under block management or, you know, whether it's just leaving gates open and letting the cows out. I mean, you know, I think that there's plenty that could be improved on hunter behavior that could change these relationships with private landowners, right?
Yeah. I want to share something that the committee talked about. And it was a great question. I'll give them credit.
Mm-hmm.
They said, one of the public hunters said, to the landowners, what's your pet peeves?
Yep.
What turns you off?
Right.
And they all said calling them morning of.
Yep.
So don't call landowners at 4 in the morning and ask for permission.
Right.
If you want permission, you should probably be out knocking doors now.
Right.
And one thing I found really interesting was landowners said hunters like to do a bait and switch using kids.
Say I'm bringing my kid out to hunt. And
So what'll happen is they'll pull into the yard, and you know, little Tommy and will come up to the door and say, "Hey, can you let my dad hunt?" And they'll be like, "Okay, yeah, you know, you and your kid can go." And then they'll turn around and say, "Great, I got 8 of my friends in the trucks pulling up too. We'll see you later."
Oh yeah.
They said that really turns them off too. That you know, you got to be. Don't use kids as pawns to get access.
Probably a good rule to live by in all aspects.
Well,
of
yeah.
Don't use kids as pawns.
And I mean, we know we're laughing about it, but apparently, like, that is really...
Right.
Ticked off some of the landowners that were on this committee. So,
rightfully so, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, you know, be upfront about who
your,
you are.
Your intent.
Who
yeah.
you are, what you're looking for. And then some of the other stuff, too, and I don't want to get too into the legal aspects of this because obviously, like, you know, paying, but to do stuff or offering work. Are two different things, but, you know, helping out or even like, you know, a thank you card or a gift card at the end of the season.
Right.
Saying, hey, thanks for letting me go. There's some appreciation there, I think. So,
yeah, I know speaking from personal experience, it goes a long way if you're willing to lend a hand, you know, in the heat of summer or, you know, in the off season to roll up old barbed wire or, you know, trim a fence line or,
yeah.
You know, just do whatever you can, you know, because, you know, the landowners are the stewards of the land, and we as hunters want to reap the benefits of that.
Yeah, and not all landowners want that help. There are some landowners that said it's more trouble for me to have to assign you work and figure out what you're doing wrong than it is just to let you go on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you still gotta figure out a way to try. And
it's still worth offering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this committee will meet two more times.
Okay.
It'll meet today and then sort of the end of July, and then they're supposed to send their final recommendations to.
And will that be, you know, in the form of like an official report to FWP that will be available to the public, or how does that look?
You know, it's not clear to me exactly how this is moving forward. I will say this committee has been a little difficult to follow from a reporter standpoint.
Oh, interesting.
They don't provide a lot of detail on what they're working on. They'll do an agenda, but we don't see a lot of like the support materials or sort of specifics about what they're looking at. So yeah, I mean, these recommendations will go to FWP, and basically what they said is that it will all be considered within this elk management plan, the advisory committee recommendations. And then there's other groups like public land or public wildlife, private land council.
Mm-hmm.
They're working on stuff too, like the 454 access agreements,
right,
and hunter ethics. And so there's a lot of entities that are all going to like, it's all going to go into a pot and we'll see what comes out of it. You know, obviously we don't have season setting again until next year,
right,
but we do have a legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. 2023 will be the next season setting. So, We'll see what happens. I think, you know, the interest groups out there are taking note of this, what's going on, and responding to it. So we'll continue to see what they do. We'll see if FWP wants to take a plunge on this or, you know, hold hearings on it or
right,
public meetings or whatever. So, but yeah, to me, it is very interesting, the response to it, that there is this mix of response of, no, we hate it, to we love it, but like a lot of people in the middle saying, well, this is interesting, but we're not there yet.
Right.
We'll see what happens. So yeah, I think we as hunters and you and I, like the general season, you know, I think have some heartburn about it too, but you know, what do you need to give up to continue to have, you know, a quality experience too?
Right.
You're always trying to balance that.
Or what do you need to give up to even improve the experience?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people in Montana haven't hunted other states. I've been to some other states and hunted, and it's a different experience.
Right.
You know, you're still hunting elk out there, and everything, but, you know, very restricted tag, short seasons.
Location specific.
Yeah. You know, and you know, it might take you years and years and years to get an elk tag.
Right.
You know, there might be some general opportunities too, but
not nearly as much as we have here in Montana.
Probably not, no.
Right, right.
Yeah, I don't wanna like oversimplify it and say that, you know, Montana's the greatest, has the perfect game management system and everything's great here and opportunities perfect, because there's always room for improvement. everything like that. But we do have very long seasons, and I think a lot of people value that.
Well, right, and there's a trade-off. You know, Montana manages for opportunity and access, and other states manage for trophy potential, you know? So you're probably not going to shoot the biggest mule deer in the West in Montana. You may not even shoot the biggest elk in the West in Montana, but you're probably going to have more opportunity to shoot a mule deer or an elk in Montana compared to other states. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way that Montana has been managed compared to other states in the West.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there are certainly East Central to Eastern Montana is all special permit.
Right.
And it's different out there than in the West. You know, that they're going to hunt cows very liberally out there, but the bulls have just been, you know, the sticking point. And, you know, that's part of what this lawsuit's about. But
right.
That's just sort of how they've handled it over there. Mm-hmm. And whether that'll change in the future, who knows? You know, that those are always sort of push and pull deals. But I think sometimes, like, we take things for granted, and sometimes you just need to take a step back and say, hey, I can go buy a general elk tag and go elk hunting today.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a pretty, that isn't like that in every single Western state. So.
Right. And it's a damn good feeling. Well, thanks for chatting. It's always fun to chat, you know, elk management and hunting policy, Tom, especially with all of the changes happening to hunting elk in Montana right now. So this is your reminder to read past the headline before you develop your opinion, and don't use your kids as pawns to get hunting access. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Montana Untamed is a podcast from the newsrooms of Lee Enterprises Montana newspapers. Visit any of our websites or subscribe wherever podcasts are found.